listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, January 20th, 2016, and it's week 8 of the Fantasy Movie League award season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm here with Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And reviewing week 7, Patrick, The Big Short.
And just first of all, before we get into The Big Short, I just want to apologize to all our listeners. My day job has got me in, I'm in my fourth state in 5 days. So if I'm a little brain fried, that's probably the reason why. But
yeah, that's the reason why. I was just going to say that.
I bleed for Fantasy Movie League, so you know I have like a little 30-minute window here, so I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, that's totally listeners. Why. It has nothing to do with anything else or like how you are normally.
You know, give or take a little bit.
All right, we'll cut you some slack. So yeah, so going into the week, it looked like it was either going to be The Big Short or Spotlight based on Oscar buzz. And Spotlight didn't quite play up to its forecasts, but The Big Short did quite well for most people that played it.
Like, it was going to be one or the other. You knew one of them was going to get the bump. It was like, just which one? I think they both got a little bit of a bump. I think Spotlight has just been out a little bit longer. Maybe more people have seen it. So The Big Short was kind of the big winner there.
So the perfect combo that fell out of that was if you played The Revenant, Star Wars, and then 6 screens of The Big Short. 296 people played that this week. And at least for me personally, I actually climbed one spot in the overall rankings. I was 55th last week. I climbed up to 54th. So I probably shook up some leagues, but it didn't seem to shake up things overall too badly.
I had a nice bump because I was hedging. I had a Revenant, I had a Star Wars, you know, I had 2 Big Shorts, 3 Spotlights. So I spread it around and that worked. I finally gained some ground, had a good week.
Nice. Now, my nerd stat of the week doesn't have anything to do with best performer, but has to do with a new data source that M37 found and shared in the forums. Did you see this in the notes I sent on?
I did see this with, like, you know, TV spots and TV buys are key.
Yeah, so he found, so M37 found a website called iSpot.tv. And what it does is you can do a search on, in this case, a movie title, and you can look for the trailer, and they'll tell you how many times that commercial or that trailer has played on a nationally televised telecast of some kind. And the thing that I thought that was especially interesting about that was the buzz on Ride Along 2 going into the weekend was that it's obviously a sequel of a movie that wasn't terribly well reviewed before, and they were probably riding on trying to get, no pun intended, a big opening weekend, and one way to do that would be to play extra commercials to get people awareness that it's out there. And the nerd stat is that I looked at this on Thursday morning, that as of Thursday morning of last week, Ride Along 2 had more national TV ad plays, 3,963, than Star Wars had since either one started their campaign. Star Wars was at 3,340.
You know, it's mildly surprising, but I don't think it's shocking because, like, everybody knew about Star Wars, and it's not just about the TV ads. It's about the merchandising. It's about the fanboys. It's a lot about the social media. Whereas Ride Along, it really is like you're trying to buy that opening, and you just need to let people know that it's out there. So a little surprising, but not shocking. And again, I watch a decent amount of sports, and like just during any kind of NFL or NBA game, Ride Along 2, I definitely saw more commercials for that than I did for Star Wars.
Yeah, you never get perfect insight into what a marketing budget for a movie might be, but this acts as kind of a nice substitute. So it's a nice data source.
I think it's a great source, but I would never rely solely on it. But I think you should like seek out as many sources as possible. This is another good one.
Oh yeah, completely agree. I don't think anything, whether it's the Showtimes stuff that Phil's Funflix comes up with, or it's theater counts, or I mean, there's just so much that can go into it and can affect how many people end up showing up and spending their tickets on whatever movie it is. But yeah, I agree. I wouldn't solely rely on it. But that one in particular I thought was interesting, given all the hype around Star Wars, that this had even more national TV ad time than Star Wars did. I thought it was interesting.
Definitely, and like you'll see that every once in a while. Like I've seen, like on Deadline Hollywood, they've been posting this kind of information for a while about TV spends, and it's kind of surprising the ones that like will shell out the most bucks. They're the ones that are trying to buy an opening. Sometimes it works, and sometimes they fall flat on their face, and it's good money after bad.
Well, Ride Along 2 ended up doing pretty well compared to its predecessor, so I'm pretty sure they're going to make their money back on that. But in terms of Fantasy Movie League pricing, it was priced a little high to really be in play this week. We'll see if that holds true here for this next week when we start to talk about that. So a couple shout-outs here to we have the T-shirt drawing for last week. That one's pending. But the high score winner for this past week was Josh E. So
Congratulations to
congrats.
Josh.
Now, a couple chatter things that were out there that I thought was interesting. There was a chatter thread out there that talked about new players, and specifically folks who started at the time that the View contest came into being versus those of us that have been playing longer than that. I started about week six of the summer season. And Patrick, you've been playing even longer than that in Spreadshirt mode.
I've been in on the ground floor.
And it was interesting. Some people had the take that some of the regulars on the chatter weren't always very kind to some of the new folks, and other folks had evidence to the contrary. And there was a lot of talk about sort of how you might conduct yourself, both sort of socially and how would you what steps should you take to go come up with a competitive lineup every week. And made me think of, one of the things if you get nerdy into forecasting, one of the things you run into is the Pareto principle. You remember that one?
This has something to do with the actual how much effort you spend into something and your results, but
Exactly.
you are the FML nerd. You'll be able to explain this a lot better than I
So
can.
yeah, so it's basically the 80-20 rule. So it's if you put in say 20, if you put it in more effort than say 20% of other people, you'll have like 80% better results than other people. But it's so if you think of it's a curve that slopes from the origin of say an XY coordinate system, it slopes up and then flattens out as it goes off to the right. And the idea there is that in order to get sort of in the upper echelons, you have to put more and more and more work into it. But just to sort of get some basic benefits out of it, that it's not actually that much effort to get sort of that first tier of goodness out of any given system. And as it relates to Fantasy Movie League, I think the biggest mistake I see new players take on is not filling up your Cineplex allotment.
It drives me insane. I don't think I've ever left a blank screen in all the weeks I've been playing.
Well, you can justify one blank screen sometimes. But you should
Once
certainly
in a
never have
while, if like,
two or
you have a
more.
top heavy lineup, but for the most
Exactly.
part, like you're just costing yourself 2 million off the bat. And so, like, why do it?
So you don't have to go into as much research as certainly I do, as certainly as some of the people on the chatter do, to have a decent lineup. But even if you just, rule of thumb, don't leave any screens blank, and if you take it to the next. To the next level, not to toot my own horn too much, but if you use the comparator, if you go to compare.fmlnerd.com, that'll give you some basics of, okay, well, if I think movie A is going to do this well, then what's the best play? And it'll calculate it all for you, and it'll tell you what the best combination is based on whatever your opinion is of different movies. Even if you just, like I said, just bare bones, if you just don't leave any blank screens, that's number one. And if you just, even if you spend like 10 minutes looking at the comparator on Thursday, you're going to do well with it, I think.
Totally agree. And it's like the opposite side of the argument. If you've played fantasy football for years, it's when you lose to the person who puts no rhyme or reason into their lineup whatsoever, and it's
Right.
just infuriating. This is kind of the same way. You can like study like every data pattern like you could possibly imagine. Of course, there's that one person who picks movies like, on a purely arbitrary basis who beats you. It's infuriating. But if you put in the time, you're going to do better than the bulk of the people. Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, and it's even the one I always hate with fantasy football is if you lose to somebody who didn't show up to your draft and they got like, an auto pick.
Ugh. I don't even allow auto pick anymore.
Yeah.
There was a guy in
So
my league, like he got kicked out. Kept auto picking.
at least with Fantasy Movie League, you have to show up and you have to fill out something. So if, like I said, just no blank screens, spend 10 minutes on the comparator, you'll do a lot better.
And again, don't be harsh to them. Like the newbies, like I want as many, it's like, it's meant to be fun. So I want as many people playing as humanly possible. Like if the chatter is going to get heated, you can either engage or you can ignore it. No big deal either way.
Well, there's one more chatter thread I want to point out here on one thing. So this came out of Billion Dollar Cineplex, who's a longtime player. He was actually the first player to comment on my blog.
And he's a very active chatter member, absolutely.
Yeah, and I got to know a little bit over email. So he pointed out something I thought was interesting, which was, and I'm going to read the comment that he left on someone else's, someone else started a thread and he posted this. Personally, I can't wait until the weekend of the 29th here. It will be the first, quote, normal weekend in 7 weeks, meaning no movie split, holiday weekend, or post-holiday weekend. And then he lists out some dates. So December 18th was when Star Wars was launched and was split into 3 days.
Which is a new holiday, and now they've moved the other Star Wars from like summer to Christmas. So it's going to become a Christmas tradition. That weekend is going to be a Star Wars weekend.
Right. I still like my Star Wars holiday on a Wednesday in May, but you know, I know I'm going to lose that. So then December 25th was Christmas. January
movie going day of the year.
January 1st, of course, was New Year's. Then we kind of had this, you know, post New Year's lull week on the weekend of January 8th. Then we had MLK weekend this past weekend. So we had a boost to box office receipts. And then we're going to have this lull here again, more than likely this weekend, because it's a short week. If everybody had sort of their January movie going out of the way there. So Billion Dollar Cineplex was looking forward to, quote, a normal one. But then M37 pointed out that on the 5th here, we're going to get the Super Bowl, which is also going to throw a wrench into some of these things. So calendar-wise, interesting impact on how things have gone.
You have the Super Bowl and then President's Day. And like we haven't had that normal weekend for a year, especially with Christmas and New Year's like occurring on Fridays this year. So it's been an unusual year. But yeah, there hasn't been much of a break. So it's been made it hard to like, you know, predict with any kind of real accuracy.
But that's what's made it challenging. So the other thing that's going on this week, it's the last week of the View contest.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is coming down to the wire.
Now, there is one person, the person who's on top has a great Cineplex name, Just Plain Awesome, and they're up by 15 million, which if we were talking about the fall or the summer season, that lead's probably safe. But given that it's the award season, obviously anything can happen. We've seen swings, you know, in the 75 to 100 million each week. And I mean, it looks like that particular player has got a chance to hold on. And the thing I like about that is if you look at their Cineplex, it looks like they joined at the time of the contest, that they were actually sort of a recruit from Matthew's appearance on The View.
Which is always a big plus. And the 15 million, Just Plain Awesome, I would recommend just play it safe. Do not get cute. Keep doing what you've been doing. And then, again, I've been researching my column right now. I think the holdovers are the way to go. We'll get to those in a little bit. But 15 million should be a safe lead, but you never know. If one of these newbies overperforms, like things could get interesting.
Now, did you see that Whoopi is still holding off Michelle for the leaders amongst the hosts of the show?
Whoopi is stealth.
Yeah, I think she's going to hang on. I think it's going to work out for her. Now, whether she'll trash talk the others once it's over, I mean, that's really what I'm waiting for.
I would love to see her trash talk Joy Behar, Candace, or whoever's like sitting in on the panel that week. That might actually make me like, you know, tune in live.
Cool. Now, last thing, two other things we can talk about here before we get to the actual week 8 here. So last week you kind of gave me a feed in for you name dropped Nate Silver, and I gave you my earthquakes versus hurricanes analogy, and I told you were opening a Pandora's box of nerd crush because of my admiration for Mr. Silver and what he does here.
Nate Silver is your god.
He is indeed. So for those of you that don't know, so Nate Silver runs the 538.com blog website that's currently owned by ESPN. And he's probably the only data scientist that you can name. So he's been on, you know, pick a news program or a late night talk show, and he's been on it. And the reason for that is because beginning in 2008, he correctly picked, I think in the 2008 election, he correctly forecasted 49 of the 50 states. And in 2012, in the presidential election, he was 50 for 50.
That's a good batting average.
It is, and batting average is appropriate because before that, he was known for a Major League Baseball predictive system called Percota that Baseball Prospectus bought from him and then brought him on as a lead analyst. And so that's where he did, you know, the bulk of his work that sort of made him famous among sports people and then, you know, among politicians with the 538 work. So his book is called The Signal and the Noise, and that's a reference to if you've got data that might be telling you something, you know, is that data that is predictive or is it data that's noisy and actually isn't telling you anything about what it is you're trying to predict and what it might happen. So what he did with the political stuff was he more or less took a weighted average of all the different polls that are out there. If you go to 538.com, they've got a really good explanation of this as it relates to the Iowa caucuses and the primaries here that are about to start for the new presidential election series. But basically, there's all these polls that have been around forever, and they have some known either bias or error in them. So he took an average of all those in each individual state, taking into account what their bias might be or what their real margin of error was. And he jumbled all those together into it's a little bit more sophisticated than an average. And what it does is it then spits out some win percentage that a particular candidate thinks might have, say, a 60% chance of winning and the other have a 40% chance of winning based on those polling averages. So have I got you so far? Or did I lose you there so far, Patrick?
You haven't lost me, but I can clearly tell that you are absolutely glowing when you could probably talk about Nate Silver for roughly 3 to 4 days.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely could. So when I started to play Fantasy Movie League, I thought here's an opportunity to take a similar approach, but to Fantasy Movie League. So my model, which, you know, is pedestrian and completely amateur compared to everything that they do over there at 538. But what my model does is every week I take an average of the two movie forecasting sites that come out on Wednesday evening. So that's Showbuzz Daily and ProBoxOffice.com. So my model averages their two forecasts. And then I did a historical analysis that looked at, well, what's their margin of error typically? And it's around 15%. That most of the time, somewhere around 80% of the time, they're between plus or minus 15% of what their forecasts are. So what my model does is it takes a little simulator and it varies each of the six best performer candidates by that plus or minus 15. So for example, you know, this week, if you take those averages, the top best performer candidate is the 13 hours. So the combined average of the two of those is 9.8 million this week. So what my model will do is it'll say, okay, take that 9.8 million and do plus 15%. Then figure out what everybody's score would be. Then do it again with minus 15% and do that with everybody else. Well, when you throw in more of the movies that you put that plus and minus to, it starts to – it's an exponential curve. If you did all 15 available movies, it would be 14 million different simulations you'd have to run. I only do it with the top six, so it only – I think it's 470-something. So it's a much more reasonable number that my laptop can do in about
30
minutes.
Yeah, I would be freaked out if you were, like, running that many different combinations. So yeah. That's good.
So I don't do the 14 million. So what I do is for each one of those simulations, given that I take those top six and plus and minus, then I score all the available combinations. And then, you know, whichever one wins each simulation, I give it a tick mark. And then I add up who had the most tick marks, and that's how I...
So what is it, like, factoring all this in, are you telling me that I should be going the Michael Bay route for my bonus pick?
This week, if you want to go with conventional wisdom, yeah, that is exactly what I'm saying. I've got a dark horse pick, though, if you think you have got some catching up to do. But yeah, so let's use that as a segue, too. Let's talk about some of the new films and what's going on here in week 8.
All right, like we've got three big new, well, let's not call them big. We have three new wide releases that we could go through, and we could just sort of, you know, give the pro and con for each, and we can discuss. So I guess first up would be Robert De Niro and Zac Efron in Dirty Grandpa. What are your thoughts?
When I first mentioned this film in my household, my wife asked whether or not Robert De Niro needed money, and that's why he keeps making these movies.
I don't think Robert De Niro needs money, but I think he likes money.
Well, fair enough. So, yeah, so this one, let's see. The long-term forecast here, I think, came in at around, it was like 11.5 or 12 million. If you average the two forecasts, it's coming in at 11.4 million. And I have it based on that 245 fantasy bucks price. I have that one not being in play this week.
I agree. I think it's going to struggle to break 10. I just don't think the marketing looks particularly funny. And even though Robert De Niro has had a lot of success in the, like, you know, the comedy genre, most of those comedies were of the PG-13 variety,
right,
through the Meet the Parents movies. Like, even The Intern in Las Vegas did decent mid-sized business, but this is, like, you know, much more of like a raunchy, like R-rated. I don't know if it's necessarily going to appeal to the people who normally go see Robert De Niro comedies.
That's a bigger bar when you go with the R-rated comedy, right?
It's kind of just a different realm.
All right, fair enough.
And as we know, Zac Efron's last solo outing where he tried to carry a movie was one of the big disasters of 2015, which was We Are Your Friends, which I think had a under $2 million opening, despite opening on like 2,300 plus screens. So I don't think like Efron's fans are going to come out. I don't think the normal De Niro fans are going to come out. So I think it's going to struggle to break 10. And at 245, I don't trust it.
Yeah, I agree. What about The Fifth Wave?
The Fifth Wave, granted, I'm not the demographic for this film, but I wasn't the demographic for either the Twilight or the Hunger Games or the Divergent films, but I'd at least heard of the books before. I knew what they were, and you could kind of feel that those might be, like, you know, kind of a big pop culture thing. Fifth Wave, I just don't get any sense of any kind of excitement or buzz surrounding it at all, so I also think that movie's going to struggle this weekend. Again, I'm not the target audience, but I just don't get any kind of sense of excitement about it.
Yeah, so I live with somebody who is in that target audience. And
well, then you can probably offer me some insight here.
Yeah, and as an extended family, I have read all the Twilight books, and I have read all the Divergent books, and I have read all the Mockingjay books, and I've even read some that they haven't yet turned into movies. And yeah, I have not heard of this
book. Believe me, they will come.
Yeah, and believe me, I'm on board, you know, as the dad of a 14-year-old girl, I'm on board with, you know, heroine who saves the world from, you know, dystopian and or alien futures. I'm all in on all that. But yeah, I don't, coming out in January on a book that I'm sure is excellent, but that I've not heard of, I don't have this one in play this week either.
Late January is largely a studio dumping ground, and I think this just proves the point exactly. I don't feel good about The Fifth Wave. I'm staying away from it.
Now, our third entry, though, The Boy. Opening
The Boy is the real wild card this weekend.
I agree with you.
I think The Boy could be a potential wild card this weekend because in a world where like a creative dud like The Forest can open up to about $13 million in January, like what's stopping The Boy? I think STX is a new production company. Like they've done a good, nice job of marketing. They had a hit with The Gift last year, and so I think they might know how to market this kind of movie. I don't think it looks awful by horror movie standards, so it could do okay. And the only star is Lauren Cohen, who is on The Walking Dead, which I don't think people are going to rush out to see her, but she does have her fans because she's on, you know, probably the most popular show on cable. So if any of the three new releases you were trying to, like, you know, bank on or put in your lineup this week, I would say it's The Boy. But I also think it's risky. I think there's a good chance people might not show up at all. So, yeah, just
Not feeling the boy completely.
Well,
although it's pretty reasonably priced, I'm just not feeling confident enough to put it in my lineup.
So let me throw some math at you here, okay?
Yes.
So if you take those averages, as I just spoke of a minute ago, and you divide it by the price, right? So if you compute the best performer number for each of our movies this week based on an average of the professional forecasts, the top best performer this candidate is 13 Hours, like we just talked about, with 68,000 and change in value. Second is Sisters at 67,000 and change. Third is Star Wars at 59,000 and change. And then fourth is The Boy at 56,700. If there's one thing I've learned about playing this game, it's that you never underestimate horror film.
Totally agree, because God knows we've seen enough of them that didn't look like they were going to do much.
Exactly.
They've overperformed every time. So that's why I wouldn't completely sleep on this movie, but it still carries some risk. But if you're trying to make up ground, this could be an interesting way to go.
So yeah, so in my article this week, I'm suggesting you go one of two ways. If you're if you're comfortable where you are, like just plain awesome, you're probably looking at a combination that uses five screens of 13 Hours and then two fillers. The top filler combo I have, according to my numbers, would be Daddy's Home and Brooklyn. But if you're looking to try to catch up, if you're behind a little bit and you're willing to take a risk to try to take a chance to get up with something a little more unusual happening this weekend in a season where something unusual has happened every weekend, you could go with four screens of The Boy and four screens of Sisters. And that would give you two of the four candidates for best performer to potentially fall back on there. And you'd have $20 left over.
It is a risky strategy, but you'd be kicking yourself on Sunday night if The Boy comes in at $5 million.
Yes, so it's high risk, high reward. You're absolutely right. If The Boy came in at $5 million, then you'd completely sink. So yeah, so proceed with caution.
I proceed with caution, and that's why, I found I've been writing my column for this week, and I realized, one of my philosophies, if you don't trust any of the newcomers, stick with the holdovers, which is, I think this week is, appropriate for that. So I'm trying to figure out a combination. I know what I'm getting with The Revenant. I know what I'm getting with Star Wars. Even Ride Along, if you look at the comps from the first film, you're going to get about a 50% drop, which isn't terrible. So if you don't believe in any of the newcomers, which I really don't this week, I'm going to try and hedge my bets with the holdovers.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm considering – I run the two accounts. On the account that just does what the model tells me to do, I'm doing one of those five times 13 Hours. Or six times 13 Hours, but I'm thinking about seeing if I can make a charge up to the top 20 by playing The Boy and Sisters.
Thinking about it. I wish you the best there.
Well, I'm gonna see what Thursday numbers for The Boy look like probably Friday morning before I make a final decision.
If it clears a million or goes significantly above, then I think you got to give it a real look.
All right. Now, before we get out of here, this is the awards season, and Oscar nominations came out in between the time that you and I recorded podcast last week and this week, and we have our annual controversy here.
It really is an annual controversy because the same thing happens every year. I think this is the second year in a row where all 20 of the acting nominees were white. And so, of course, the Spike Lees, the Jada Pinkett's are considering boycotting. And I'm sure Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton have something right behind. So not a new story. It's just one that happens about probably every other year.
See, to me, the biggest thing about this is that to me puts a tremendous amount of pressure on Chris Rock. Because now, I guess you can think of it either he can do no wrong or he can do no right. He's either not going to say enough and he's going to irritate one community, or he's going to say too much and he's going to irritate another community. Balancing that line for him, I think, is going to be really difficult.
I think Chris Rock is one of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time.
Agreed.
There are a few people funnier. Hosting the Academy Awards is the most thankless job in show business. Granted, you're never going to have a larger audience, but that's kind of just a dead room. if you're too controversial and you actually try to be funny, like, you know, the PC police come after you. And then if you just try and play it safe, there's the other side of people who will say, like, why didn't he take more chances? Why didn't he be himself? So, like, the Oscars really isn't a forum for Chris Rock to be Chris Rock. I mean, he'll be funnier than, you know, I think the average host or most people who typically host it, but he's kind of in no man's land there. So I think he'll try his best, but does anybody ever really hit the Oscars out of the park when they host?
Yeah, that's the hardest gig in show business, isn't it, to host that show? Even in a regular year, let alone one where there's, you know, some heightened senses.
And I think it's kind of a manufactured controversy. I mean, like, who are the big snubs that people are so outraged over? Like, I liked Creed a lot. I thought Michael B. Jordan was excellent. But it's not a crime against humanity that he wasn't nominated. Ditto Idris Elba and Beasts of No Nation. I think that was always going to have an uphill battle, like, with its, like, kind of coming out on one screen to make yourself eligible for awards. But then most of it was on Netflix. So I don't think there's, like, this snub or somebody where it's just an absolute travesty that they weren't nominated. It just didn't happen this year. So I think the controversy is a little manufactured, and it happens just about every year. So, well, I'm kind of used to it.
I think the problem happens earlier in the cycle. And I see this in my industry as well, in the computer industry, which is dominated by old white guys in positions of power. And, you know, I think I saw a statistic this week that it's something like, I think it's 98% of studio heads and even 92% of vice presidents are old white guys. So, you know, if they're the ones making the decisions about what gets made, and by extension, whose stories are getting told, then that to me is the core of the problem. Because then you would have more choice, and there would be more chances to have the Oscar nominees be more representative if the films themselves were more representative.
Totally agree. And I mean, the Academy body, I think it's about 6,000 people. It's largely old, and it's largely white. So if, let's say, you're a 75-year-old retired makeup artist who used to work in Hollywood back in the 50s, are you going to be more excited or relate to, are you going to relate to Brooklyn, or are you going to relate to Straight Outta Compton? Both good movies for different reasons, but if you're an older, like, you know, whiter, like, voting body, you're probably going to go to, like, you know, the more conservative choice. And eventually, like, I think there's slowly but surely, I think there's a little more diversity in the voting body, but it's kind of a cultural change. It's going to take time. So that's kind of where my head's at there. But I don't think there's, like, a performance or a movie out there that just didn't get nominated where it was a complete outrage.
Well, we'll see what happens when we have the same conversation next year, and it'll be interesting to see how Mr. Rock handles the whole thing.
We might as well just tape this conversation now and then just, like, swap in, like, a different name of whoever's hosting, and it'll be the same thing next year.
Wait, one of us was supposed to be taping this?
I thought we were just having a phone conversation here.
Well, hey, so that's it for week 8 of the Fantasy Movie League Awards season. Patrick, you want to give your weekly Twitter shout out?
You can follow me anytime you like at the Box Office Guy on Twitter. And where can we find you, Pete?
I'm at Nerd Guru on Twitter. Now, the league itself, you can find at FML_movies and on Facebook just at Fantasy Movie League. And you can get Fantasy Movie League gear at FantasyMovieLeagueShop.com. This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at FantasyMovieLeague.com.